This is episode 56 of the IDRA Class Notes Podcast.
The community is very much a part of the school. The school was open not just to parents, but it was open to people in the community. And that was our way, or my way, of trying to create this community of learners, actually this community of practice that is critical nowadays in order to have a school succeed.
Welcome to the IDRA's Class Notes Podcast. I'm Aurelio Montemayor. In this podcast series, we explore issues facing education today and strategies for teachers and administrators to better serve all students. We encourage you to share your comments about this show. There will be details at the end of this podcast on how to do that. If you like our show, we ask you that you tell three others or leave a review for us on iTunes. That helps others find us. Our website is www.idra.org. We've set up an email alert to let you know when a new episode of Class Notes is available. If you're not subscribing to this podcast, our email alerts can help you stay up to date. Just go to our website to sign up. And don't forget to sign up for our free monthly Graduation for All electronic newsletter and our new IDRA News electronic newsletter. Again, you can sign up at our website. Our topic for today is the family-friendly principle with Dr. Rogelio Lopez del Bosque. Rogelio has just returned to IDRA after having served as a principal at Easterwood Academy in the Houston Independent School District for 5 years. His professional background includes teaching English, Spanish, reading, and ESL, as well as serving as a reading consultant, supervisor, and assistant director for multilingual programs. He's also taught courses at the community college and university level. Rogelio has a master's degree in educational administration and a doctorate in educational leadership. Good morning, Rogelio.
Good morning, Aurelio.
You know, we've talked before, and your experiences as a principal have been very illustrative of a lot of things that are important to IDRA. And, you know, we have a set of principles for family leadership and education that inform everything that we do. And I really feel, having worked with you and observed you over those 5 years, how you are really a family-friendly principal. So those interested in seeing those principles can visit our website. We have a handout, and there will be one attached to the information with this podcast online. But what I'm going to do, Rogelio, is I'm going to go down some bullets, some ideas, and see what you think about it, and more specifically, how did you do this as principal on your campus? Okay. So I'll say, first of all, a family-friendly principal is someone who creates a campus that is welcoming, warm, and accepting of all families. How do you think about it?
Well, I think this is a very important component, Aurelio, and I think that as a principal, it is a prime role and responsibility. The principal must be the example, must be the model, the role model for everyone in school to follow. However, one of the first things that the principal must do, or that I did, was to make sure that the front office was covered with parent-friendly people. Parents were to be welcomed, made to feel at home, and to be notified that how much wait time there was for them to see whoever they had to see at the time.
That's good, and that's I actually experienced that quite often. Well, if we say then that the family-friendly principal operates from valuing assumptions about children and families, how did you do that? How did you operate out of those assumptions?
It's very important not only that you serve as a role model to welcome the parents, but it's also very important that we make the parents understand that their input is very important. At Eastwood Academy, I felt that one of the biggest strengths that I took with me was working with parents. So in terms of bringing the parents in, one of the first things that we had to work on was build the trust. Being very friendly in the front office is critical. From there, we developed the trust. From there, they started asking questions. So in terms of valuing the parents, when we treated them as important components of that system, of that school, then they started responding positively. But we saw how much information they could contribute to the school in terms of their children.
Okay, let me just follow up on this very point. If the parent, let's say, is poor, blue-collar, or doesn't speak English, are there some things you're going to be especially aware of in valuing them, or what do you tell staff?
Actually, it's something that's very important because we were faced with that situation.
You were a Title I school.
We were a Title I school, and about 80% of our students were from low socioeconomic families. However, we have to look, as a principal and working with a great staff, we had to look beyond the person, beyond the level of education, beyond the socioeconomic status. What we had to look at was show them how valuable they were and they are in terms of helping their children succeed. So once we explained that to the parents, they certainly wanted to participate. Many parents would tell me that they could come in and paint the walls or help us do something of that nature. And I was very direct in letting them know that I had people that were paid by the district to paint the walls. I needed their help to help the school so that the school could help their child.
That's very interesting because the traditional way that certainly parent organizations see parents is they're like free labor. Okay, good. Oh, you can paint the wall. You can do this. But when you were seeing them as key resources for understanding the children and as your partners, what was the key piece that you wanted from them if you didn't want their free time to paint the wall?
Actually, the first thing I had to do was build the trust. And then I had to develop a system that was consistent so that they knew when they should be there. I developed a system of communication with them so that they could report to our meetings. At that point, when they started reporting to our meetings and we started talking about the needs of the school and what they could do to help us in this process, there were many volunteers and more than was necessary to do what we had to do at the school.
What were some of the key things that you consulted with them or wanted their input on?
Well, the first thing that I started off with was basically know what the budget was about. I talked to, just like I talked
to
the
staff. You explained the budget to them?
Absolutely, absolutely. I talked to them about the budget, how much money we had and how much we could spend on teachers and how much money we were going to spend on materials and how much money we had to spend from that for that entire year and what were our limitations. From that point on, we talked about curriculum and what we were expecting to be able to build in this school in terms of curriculum and instruction. However, I sort of made them a part of this process so that they could contribute to this process. And the way they did it was, what can we do? Mm-hmm. If they did not know about curriculum and instruction, they certainly made sure that their children were coming to school every day, were being there on time, that they were getting their assignments, and they knew right away that if the child had a problem, that we would create an intervention and make sure that they were involved.
Right away. You know, one of the things that I remember visiting your campus and the many times that we worked together was that you personally, but also some of your best staff, knew the child better because you listened to the parent talk about their child. In other words, you mined their understanding of their own children in ways to connect to their instruction.
Right.
And you modeled that. What were some things that you consciously modeled for your faculty and your staff that you wanted them to emulate and how you related to those families?
Actually, I wanted them to, although many of my teachers did not speak Spanish, I was always speaking Spanish. Those parents that were Spanish speakers, I was speaking Spanish to them. But some of the things that I wanted the staff and office personnel to emulate is to make sure that the parents felt welcomed, that they felt that they were appreciated, that they felt that they had priority, and of course that whatever questions they had, that we were going to do our very best to answer.
Basically. I remember that. Now, the other thing that we find in a family-friendly principal is that that person, he or she, seems to find interesting connections, collaborations, and partnerships. And two that I remember as we worked together, one is you set up these computer classes at night for the parents, and number two, every year when the students presented their campus-wide projects, parents presented too. Why did you see those kinds of connections as important?
I felt those connections were important because it's a way of actually allowing the parents to participate although we had some parents who were non-literate, they participated in the process and the projects. I also felt that the community is very much a part of the school. The school was open not just to parents, but it was open to people in the community, and that was our way, or my way, of trying to create this community of learners, this community of practice that is critical nowadays in order to have a school succeed.
Tell me a little bit more of that, since you brought it up, how the parents fit. Because I understand a community of practice is like professionals, teachers with teachers.
Right.
But you folded the community and the parents into this. Why was that important?
That was very important because I felt that the parents had a lot of questions and had a lot of recommendations to make for the school. And for instance, I did not realize how important technology... I know how important technology is, however, for our students and our staff, but I didn't realize how important it was to them as parents.
Exactly.
So therefore, this is one of the things that I listened to that felt valued, and this is why I made my connections through the community to bring in computer literacy classes for the parents.
You know, one of the big challenges for parent involvement, you know, you hear the broken record of we invite them and they don't come, and you hear that at the elementary level. And there's especially a challenge at secondary, because at the secondary level, you're departmentalized. We're not taught how to do parent involvement when we're trained to be teachers and administrators. But you had roomfuls, I remember 50, 60, 100 parents in the room. And of course, all the kids had to go to the library because they didn't fit in the room. But what was it that allowed you to have meetings so often that were so well attended? Did you pay them?
Of course not. What was critical in this process is that the idea of inviting parents and parent involvement was not, the responsibility of carrying that forth was not left to one person. I was a prime leader on that process. However, everyone on that campus was responsible. I'm talking about clerks, I'm talking about teachers, and I'm talking about students themselves. Now, believe it or not, but even our janitorial staff was very involved with the community, and they played a critical role, although they were not instructors, but they were critical in what we were doing at Eastwood Academy. So they themselves also had a part in making sure that they got the word out regardless, and that they made the parents feel comfortable. The more comfortable they felt, the more they felt that they could come and contribute.
And the meetings were in both languages.
Yes.
And if some didn't understand English or didn't understand Spanish, there was translation.
Exactly.
You know, it was interesting because I remember your custodial personnel were very friendly to families, but they were treated with the same dignity that you were and your teachers were. In other words, there was a principle across the board of treating everybody with dignity. And when anybody did not do that, you called them on it. I mean, that was constant. Well, I'm going to go back just because we need to wrap up is... If one assumption is that the families are prime advocates for their children, they're the defenders of their success, how did you experience that, families as defending the rights or the success of their children?
Actually, the involvement of the parents actually led us and the school to be even that much more creative to add additional courses for our students, for graduation, for retention of students, holding power of the school to where... All of this process, although it took some time, led to 100% graduation of our students, 100% going to college, offering the distinguished diploma, offering courses for parents in the evening. And the next level before I retired was even getting some credit courses through the community college for the parents themselves. So it was a combination of all staff, a combination of the parents working together as a community to provide the necessary stages or whatever in order to make the school a success. And, of course, Eastwood now has had 2 years of success in being an exemplary school and has been selected one of the top 10 schools in the city of Houston, along with one of the top schools in the nation through U.S. News and World Report.
And that's wonderful, especially when you consider that it's like 90% Latino and a Title I school.
Yes.
Thank you. This is a principal whose words match his actions. Thank you very much, Rogelio.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to IDRA Class Notes. For more information on IDRA and other Class Notes topics, go to www.idra.org. You can also send us your thoughts by email to podcast@idra.org or fill out the form on our podcast webpage at www.idra.org/podcasts.